We kick off hour number two, as always, here live from the Mountain View Chevy studios of Fox Sports Knoxville, your Silverado truck champion and the number one Chevy dealer in all of East Tennessee. They got you covered, Mountain View Chevy, downtown Chattanooga, right off I-24. You can shop all the inventory at mtnviewchevy.com. And if you're looking for something specific, just give them a call. Tell them you heard about them right here on Fox Sports Knoxville. You can search their pre-owned inventory as well as all the brand new Chevys at Mountain View Chevy, because Houston, you know, it's not a Chevy
unless it's a Mountain View Chevy. We say bring it on, Mother Nature.
You love that one, don't you?
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
If you need a new Chevy Silverado, they've got the low price promise at Mountain View Chevy. They'll meet or beat any advertised price, and not just on the Silverado. That goes for any vehicle.
Whoa.
Yeah, you heard that right. The low price promise, any vehicle, any Chevy there at Mountain View Chevy. Just show them the price, and they will meet or beat it for you at Mountain View Chevy, home of the low price promise. So where do we go from here?
I don't know. The Sweet Peas barbecue poll question is out. Mm-hmm. And I think because we've asked this a couple times now. I think we asked it with 9 games to go in the regular season. What do you kind of predict Tennessee's record to be? I want to say 8-1 might have won that poll. If it didn't, then it was 7-2, and then we did it again with 7 games to go, and everyone predicted 6-1, and then they lost again. And so I the Sweet Peas barbecue poll question today is it time to maybe start worrying a little bit about this basketball team? Is it time to, I don't want to maybe not press the panic button, but at least be cognizant that some things are not looking as they should. Currently, the winner is perhaps, but not yet, at 46%. So a lot of people saying, it's not great, but I'm not panicking just yet. 37% say yes, they're concerned. 13% say no, no worry whatsoever. The SEC is tough. And 4% are in full-blown panic mode. I chose yes, I'm concerned. I'm not in full-blown panic because there's still, until the season's over, there's always time to save the season in college basketball. That's the beauty of it, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going to make the tournament, the season's not over until the season's over. Wise words from Chris. Put that one on the epitaph.
Just to run that back, the season's not over until the season is over?
Boom.
Okay.
You can always save the season until it's over.
And then at that point, you can't.
At that, once it's over, Davey, you can't save it. But Tennessee, they could still do it, but I'm nervous. Sorry, I'm nervous about it. Because I don't.
I'm going to be scared to death if they get to if they slip to a 5 seed. The bracketology before the weekend had them as a 4 in the East, according to Joe Lenardi. That's in Boise. I don't understand this Boise thing. Like, if they're a 5 in the South or a 4 in the South, they're in Boise, and if they're a 5 or 4 in the East, they're in Boise. It's kind of weird, but if they fall to a 5, I will be freaking out. It'll be nail biting from the jump. I don't know. It'll just feel so much different. I don't know. It might be worse if they're a 4, because at least they're a 5. Like, yeah, 5s lose all the time. But if you lose as a 4, it's like, dadgummit. I know we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, we know they won't be getting the 1 seed.
You know they're only 1 game out of, like, 7th in the SEC, right? And
yeah.
Last year when they were picked, what?
That's what worries me. This is what they did last year. They had a path to the tournament and lost their way out of it.
They did.
That's what scares me, is that we've seen this from this team before.
Last year they were picked, like, what, 12th in the league or something?
Yeah.
And about halfway through the season, we're like, look at these guys. They're not 12th.
They were 3rd or 4th,
ninth.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the 12th. Yeah, at the end of the season, they were 11th or 12th.
I mean, you do have complete control of second place right now.
Yeah, with 4 teams behind you, one of which you play on Wednesday night.
Yeah.
So if you lose to Florida, you are immediately in a log jam for 3rd, and there's so many teams in that range.
That's if all those teams continue to win as well, though.
Well, which they technically cannot because many of them play each other.
Some will win, some will lose. But if you go 2-2, as John Tweet predicts,
2-2 is not good.
Not good at all.
Not good. I don't know. They got to figure something out. They got to figure something out by Wednesday, and I don't know what that is. If it's a health issue, I don't know what you do. Like, I don't think you can beat Florida with Grant Williams sitting on the bench.
No, you got to roll. You got to play him against Florida. Hope you can win, and then figure out what to do. And with these,
maybe add Ole Miss. If Ole Miss looks bad this week without Andy Kennedy, do you think at least monitor his minutes against Ole Miss? I mean, if you can get away with playing him for 10 or 15, maybe try. That's if that's even an injury. Again, I am kind of eyeballing this and saying he looks different since he tweaked the hip against LSU. I know he went back in and played even in that game, but it hasn't looked the same for Grant Williams since he kind of got was it undercut kind of on a rebound.
He went for a rebound. The guy kind of came under him. It looked like his lower back,
and
an awkward bend.
Yeah, it was.
And then he re-aggravated it shooting a layup where he was.
Against Kentucky, right?
No. This was still LSU. It was
okay,
the same
game. I remember. Yeah,
he went out and then
yeah.
he had a
got a little too far into the basket. Yep, had to lean back on it. Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, lower back, hip, whatever. Not good.
Do you find solace in knowing that Florida is also on a two-game skid? They've lost two in a row, both to Georgia and then Vanderbilt.
Yes, but it's also going to make it hurt worse if Tennessee doesn't come out and play with some passion and pride on Wednesday night. Because again, I hate to keep harping on this, but every time this team has a chance, again, to kick the door down, they have failed to do it. Frankly, Nate, they might have another chance Wednesday. As you said, if Alabama goes in and beats Auburn, it will ring out in Thompson Bowling before the game is over that Auburn has lost another one, two in a row. And if you're playing poorly at the time or end up losing that game, like, hell, I'm almost saying to whoever would announce it, just shut up. Don't tell this team if Auburn loses. I don't want them to know that they've got a chance to win. I need this team in a dark room all week and just roll them out on game day to play the game without knowing where they stand and what's going on. I don't need them to see a number by their name. I don't need them to see what position they are in the SEC. I don't need them to see who won or lost that day, because every time they've had that opportunity, they've not handled it well. I need this team to go in blind. Blind. That's when they're going to play their best basketball. When they think there's nothing to play for. When they can play loose and play free. I don't know how we're still having this conversation. They did this last year where they had some success, an opportunity to kick the door down for the NCAA tournament, and they choked. It is what it is. Sorry if you don't like that word. It is what it is. That's what they did. And right now, I'm not saying they're choking, but they are on a skid. They are not playing good basketball right now. I don't want them to know if Auburn loses on Wednesday night.
You tweeted out 21 minutes ago. What is the cause for Tennessee basketball's recent skid? You can tweet at @VolRumorMill and tell him what you think. Our own Will Warren says, peaking too early has never been proven in any sort of scientific study, so it ain't that. Team requires at least decent guard play to do anything serious, and Bone has been useless offensively for a month plus.
Then why is he still starting?
It's a good point.
I mean, I'm serious. Like, at what point do you say Lamonte Turner comes off the bench and gives you 14? If he starts, does he get hot earlier? Does he help you earlier? He doesn't turn the ball over when he's in there, and he scores points.
Would it help Bone to bring a spark to say, you're coming off the bench, and when Bone gets in there, he's like, well, I better attack now. I better have the right mentality because I'm, you know, not going to get to play as much. I don't know. I see some of these guys play a certain way, and I'm like, why isn't that the way you play all the time? I just don't get it, especially the guards, because like Tweet said, Admiral Schofield's not a back to the basket big man. He's really done a great job extending his range, being able to catch and shoot the three in rhythm where it's really hard to defend. Kyle Alexander's playing more minutes. He's getting more rebounds. I feel like his defense has been better recently, but these guards are like just non-existent. Will also says Daniel has been bad since LSU too, means it's all on Turner and Bowden's shoulders from there, and neither would be called consistent.
Just so strange. James Daniel III was money against Iowa State, and then since then he's just fallen off a cliff. He's no-showed. He had the one big shot against South Carolina after getting his rear end chewed off. I think that was the only three he hit all night. He's been turning the ball over. They haven't been defending as well. Are they tired? Is everybody not tired? Have they played extra harder than other teams? Like, I don't know. I don't buy that. Like, it's all pretty much equal here. So,
yeah, I mean, and it's not like they've played a really, had a short bench all year. They've played more guys and more minutes than most of these teams on their schedule. Not to mention, the South Carolina game at home was on Tuesday. So they had the benefit of having the early game midweek. Again, the last 2 weeks, they've gone early game on Tuesday, and they've won both of those. Then they've had the extra day of rest all the way to Saturday and laid an absolute dud in both on the road, at Alabama, at Georgia. It's been
great point by Greg Hill, tweeted in. Bone, though he did only score 4 points, he did have 7 assists and no turnovers, which is obviously very, very good. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, I don't know. You kind of got to be a scoring threat out there, though, as a guard for this team.
I don't know. I think you nailed it, though. Against Georgia, you can't have Grant Williams only have 5 points.
No, yeah. Well,
and they weren't even coming with an immediate double team for a large section of that game.
No, and I think we know at this point that really long athleticism for other teams is a nightmare for us. Because Grant, as good as he is, when guys just don't have to work that hard to guard him because of their length, you know, he becomes much easier to defend. I mean, that's what Kentucky did. They made it very, very difficult because they're so long and athletic. They alter shots. That said, he had makeable shots, many of them, on Saturday that he just missed. He missed some bunnies. So maybe he gets that corrected and everything is fine. But it's pretty clear that the athleticism and length of teams like Bama, like Georgia, Mississippi State's going to have the exact same thing, but that has given Tennessee trouble late in the season. They have struggled against that type of player. Even Kentucky, we saw the offense really, really struggle against Kentucky. Thank God Kentucky can't hit shots, because that athleticism on the perimeter and in the paint gave Tennessee fits until Lamonte finally pulls up from 5 feet beyond the line and buries one.
Today's Sweet Pea's barbecue poll question: the Vols have lost 2 out of 3, haven't played that well since beating Ole Miss. Is it time to start worrying? You can vote at Fox Sports Knox on Twitter. Your options: no, the SEC is tough, perhaps, but not yet; yes, I'm concerned; or full-blown panic. Make your voice heard at Fox Sports Knox on Twitter. You can also give us a call, 865-546-8200. Last call for phone calls on this topic, so get them in now. If you want to weigh in, we'll hit a quick break and be right back with more 3 and Out driven by Toyota Knoxville. Welcome back into the Mountain View Chevy Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. We thought this team was going to be a one seed. Who is going to be? I don't know if the committee can find a one seed. It might just be like, yeah, we went with Virginia, Villanova, and then we pick two conference champs from the lower levels. It was Tennessee, you know, had the best chance for the third one seed when Purdue was, or the fourth one seed when Purdue was the third, and you know, and then it was, oh wait, Purdue's lost. We're gonna go Xavier, and then Lenardi came out and said, no, now it's Auburn one seed. Now they lose.
Yep. I mean,
the dreaded curse.
Everybody who has some success this season ends up falling flat on their face. I mean, it's not a Tennessee problem. I mean, I'm not pressing the panic button, but this is a sports show, and we're going to talk about the sports. And when the sports don't go well, we're going to say it's not going well. Well, I'm not down on the team or Rick Barnes. I think there's still a lot for them to play for. But the reality is, you've lost 2 out of your last 3. You haven't looked great in your last 4. Like, We're going to talk about why, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I I don't know. Maybe this team needs postseason play. Maybe that's the juice and the jolt that they need. I do agree with what John Tweet called in and said earlier. I think talent deficient might not be like top to bottom, maybe not, but I do think that most teams at this stage in the season have a guard that they can kind of rely on. Like they have, or a big. Tennessee doesn't have really either of those. They have not had consistent guard play. They do not have a Colin Sexton who can just go to the basket, you know, at will. They do not have a big 7-footer or a super freak athlete inside, you know, 6'9 and above, who can just create and rebound and get easy stuff. They have to work harder than most other teams to get good shots offensively. That is just the way it is. They have been okay because defensively they have been really sound for most of the season and in most of their games. The problem we've seen with this basketball team is when their defense fails them, they're not good enough offensively to keep pace with teams that are going quick and scoring fast. They had a better second half offensively against Georgia, but their defense was infinitely worse. They gave up 19 more points in the second half than they did in the first half. That is a problem. So what do you do? Or 17, something like that. So how does Tennessee, you know, how can they slow down other teams while not exerting so much energy defensively that the offense is a joke? I mean, it's a balance. They have to find that balance. They have to figure out how to work hard defensively without, you know, ruining their opportunities offensively. I don't know if that means – I mean, I really don't know, because I don't know who you can rely on, and that's been the problem. The number two option outside of Grant, we've talked about that for a long time. When he's not having a good day, who steps up? Kyle Alexander stepped up a little bit yesterday. Admiral, probably could have got a little bit more from him. Certainly could have got more from Bone and Bowden. I thought Turner played good. JD3 was bad. It's one of those things. You know, we've seen games where Turner and Bone and Bowden and JD3 are all on, and then you beat Ole Miss by 30. We really probably need just two of those guys to be on. The problem is when none of them are on, you're going to lose to Alabama by 30, or you're going to go and drop a tough one to Georgia. It's all about consistency with this basketball team, and they're struggling to find it right now.
Well, when you look at the brackets, Kansas is the 2 seed, according to Joe Lunardi, and I guess could be one of those teams that could play their way in as a 1. It's probably going to come down to teams like winning their last few games and then running the table and winning their conference, like these teams that may share a regular season title then win their conference tournament. And I know you mentioned this earlier, Houston, but I feel like now's the time to get into it if we're going to, at least briefly. Apparently, I didn't watch this game, but Kansas took 35 free throws in their game against West Virginia. The Mountaineers shot 2.
What?
Yeah, they attempted 2 free throws. Mm-hmm.
35 to 2?
To 2.
That's why that Bob Huggins rant that I sent you was...
Yeah, Huggins was ejected for arguing with officials in the final seconds of Saturday's loss at Kansas. It was a 77-69 loss. And Huggins said, "I've been in this game a long time. That can't happen. You have no chance to win." Kansas was called for 14 fouls, but only one came on West Virginia's 61 shot attempts. The Mountaineers were called for 26 fouls. Kansas made 26 of its 35 attempts.
Huggins picking up my baton where I left it for officials having to answer some questions after games.
"I've been doing this 40 years," he said. "I don't think I've ever been in a game where we shot 2 free throws. I don't think I've ever been in a game where the disparity is 35 to 2. I've never been in a game like that. The sad part is they," meaning Kansas, "don't need it. That's a good team. They're very well coached. They don't need that. They don't need somebody to do that. I'm going to tell you what, there's something wrong to do that to kids who are playing their hearts out."
Oh.
And then in your favorite quote of this whole thing, Houston, "Officials want to be part of the game, but they don't want to be part of the game that has to answer. Why aren't they here answering your questions?" Asked what he told his team after the game, West Virginia's 6th loss in their last 6 to Fog Allen Fieldhouse. Huggins said.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say that they've lost six games in a row.
No, no, no.
Gotcha.
No, just six in a row at Kansas. Gotcha. A lot of teams do that. He said he told his players it wasn't their fault. Yikes.
After a game like that, even if every call was the right call, do they not need to at least be asked the question? Is it not fair to at least ask the officials, how does this happen, and do you believe truly that this game was refereed fairly? Do you believe that? Do you actually believe that one team was fouled enough to shoot 35 free throws and the other team two? And just see what they say. At least to know where their mentality is after the game. Like, often, referees in a game will kind of even things out. They probably don't like to admit it, but most refs, if one team is getting the benefit of the calls early in a half, they try to even it up, right? They try to make it look good. Free throws are, it's kind of hidden because you can obviously call fouls and make the fouls look even and not allow teams to shoot free throws. You can call it, you know, on the floor or a ball screen or something like that. This is incredible. I've seen, you know, you see numbers like 20 to 10 and coaches get upset. 35 to 2?
35 to 2.
I'm sorry, but I think that the referees that called this game should be required to answer a question or two about that discrepancy. Maybe they get up there and they say, we called it as fair as we could and that's what we saw, and that's fine. Maybe even after reviewing some of the calls, they end up being right. But I would like to see the officials, right after the game, at least be subjected to media asking them, in a situation like this especially, if it had been fair and a close game and a team just hits a buzzer beater, you know, there's not going to be many questions to ask the officials. Maybe no one even shows up to their press conference. In this situation, this is why you need it. 35-2, that seems like a damn fix. It's almost too blatant to be a fix. But how does that happen? Especially the way West Virginia plays.
And it's not like Kansas. Sometimes, I've seen this happen in high school a lot of times when one team plays zone or one team plays like a, sure, especially like an extended kind of 1-3-1 type of half-court zone, or a team packs it in and plays 2-3 zone and the other team takes a bunch of jump shots. And so the team that's playing against the zone defense doesn't shoot as many free throws as they normally do because they took a lot of outside jumpers as the other team just tries to pack it in. But this is Kansas and West Virginia. Like, Huggins, they play notoriously hard on the defensive end. He preaches them to attack the basket. Kansas is historically a pressure man-to-man defensive team, like most of the top teams in college basketball. Like, this isn't – if this would have been against, one of Boeheim's good Syracuse teams, sometimes their opponents don't shoot many free throws because they settle too much for jump shots. But not a Huggins coach. Like, that is so strange. And here's the thing. In the second half, Kansas was trailing. Like, they were on the ropes in this game. Like, this was a huge win.
So what
you're
saying? Are you saying it was fixed? But based on the eyeball test from Coach Hodges, are you saying this game was fixed?
Do we have a problem in college basketball?
Is West Virginia and Bob Huggins, are they in the crosshairs? Do we got some shenanigans here?
My initial reaction is to go the opposite, because if the refs knew it was this big of a discrepancy, wouldn't they have kind of evened it up? Especially if they were trying to fix it. Wouldn't they have tried to make sure they
if Kansas had to win.
Had to have the game?
Not if Kansas had to win. What was the final?
They won by 8, but according to the ESPN article by Sam Kahn Jr., who's talking about how the win by Kansas was massive, sets up a huge week in the Big 12 because they were on the brink of going, I think, two games. No, if they lost this game, they'd have ended up a game behind Texas Tech, who's number 7, and one of the other teams that's on the 2 line, according to Joe Lunardi, and could possibly get to the 1. I mean, they're number 7 in the country. If they win the Big 12, Texas Tech could be your fourth one seed. But now that Kansas won, they keep pace. They stay in line for their, 13th in a row Big 12 championship?
Yeah, something like that.
It's wild.
Some ridiculous number.
Kansas does play Texas Tech on the 24th.
Sets up a showdown. It's good. It was good for the Big 12 that Kansas won this game, if you know what I'm saying.
Wow. I'm calling cahoots. Collusion.
Good for Huggins to get ejected. Sometimes you just got to make a stand. Sometimes
he's
going to
get, and they're going to fine him. Like, think about that too.
Yeah.
Don't you dare talk about it, Bob Huggins. That's the most ridiculous. The fact that a coach can't complain publicly about officiating is beyond crazy to me. Conferences or leagues or schools sometimes will fine the coach for saying that he thinks his team got a raw deal. How does that make sense? Hey, keep your mouth shut about the officiating. That's the one thing you can't touch. Why are officials, like, why are they treated like royalty? I just don't get it. I get that their job is hard. Coaching's hard. Playing's hard. Why are officials immune to criticism? Why is this? We can't talk about it. You can't publicly say you don't think it was fair or you'll get fined. If you argue with them in a game, they'll just throw you out of the game. I want to throw an official out of the game. What if an official's so bad that they need to get tossed? Why does it only go one way with officials? I just don't, like, you can't tell me that these guys don't make mistakes. You can't tell me that sometimes they're not dead wrong, and for some reason, as a sports society, you just cannot question the official. I'm not saying be nasty to the guy. I'm just saying, why can Bob Huggins, like, he's going to get fined for this. He's going to have to shell out, I don't know, 15 grand? Because he said, this is a joke? Oh, 15 grand, how dare you? It was bad. His team got jobbed at the free throw line, 35-2. But no, don't talk about the officials. What, are they sensitive? Are we afraid we'll hurt their confidence if we talk bad about them? Is that the case?
West Virginia was up 10 with 7 to go. They were up 3 with 2 minutes and 11 seconds left in the game.
How many free throws did Kansas shoot in the last 2 minutes?
That's a good question.
That's what I'd like to know. Did they start calling a bunch of fouls there late to make sure that Kansas got to the free throw line?
That looked a foul right there. That one I watched.
Was it a foul?
They didn't call it because it was West Virginia driving to the basket.
Oh, man. Things like that make it really tough for me to, like, get all in on the sports are fair thing. You want to believe, but this is bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's bad. If that had been Tennessee, I'd be livid.
At least the tournament is on the neutral floor, so you don't have that type of falling into the home crowd, you know, dynamic.
It's in St. Louis. The SEC tournament is. It's going to be all Missouri. They get Michael Porter Jr. back?
That's over.
Done. Done. Did you say Dunzo? Dunzo to Conzo Dunzo?
I didn't mean to.
I'm sorry. I just don't like officials getting a free pass. I get it. They work hard. I'm not saying they don't. I'm just saying sometimes people work hard and make mistakes. I would like to see accountability.
Surely
that's
these
all.
Officials either knew or Bob Huggins told them at some point.
Oh, no, they
in
knew.
The second half.
They knew. That's why I got questions. I got questions.
Kansas did have made five free throws in the final 8 seconds of the game. But I know you're kind of like fouling a little bit more at that point.
Yeah, that's a little different.
No, wow. West Virginia controlled the game, and Kansas
until
tied
the
it
refs
up,
took it back from them.
Tied it up with 2:11 left.
Why would a conference protect Kansas so much? Like, they've won it enough. So stupid.
I don't know. It's like people saying, you know, the SEC wants, you know, they want a Alabama Florida SEC championship game type of thing.
All right.
Actually,
whatever.
Quite frankly, they wouldn't mind an Alabama Tennessee championship game. Tennessee could just get close. The officials would help them. They'll make sure it's Tennessee, Georgia,
Florida. I don't know what you're talking about right now. I don't know where you are. Are you talking about football all of a sudden?
Yeah, football.
How are you talking about football?
What just happened? People accuse the SEC of making sure Alabama football always wins to get to the championship game. Uh-huh. So they have a playoff team and all that kind of stuff.
They didn't make it this year.
They made it to the SEC championship.
No, they didn't.
No, they didn't. No,
that was
Auburn.
Hit the break, Davey. Nate's asleep.
They just...
1038 Furniture.
Welcome back to 3 and Out, driven by Toyota Knoxville. Talked a lot of Tennessee basketball on the program, of course, as we're, I mean, this is the February Blues portion of the schedule, but I think we just hoped that the team would be a little more mature than to drop a game, a crucial SEC game on the road at Georgia when you have a golden opportunity to move one game closer to Auburn. Their next chance to get back on the winning track is Wednesday night, 9 o'clock, a rivalry game against the Florida Gators. And it's that late start. I know people hate it, but hopefully Tennessee will show up. Maybe that's what they need. Maybe they need a later start. It was too early on Saturday, and that was the problem.
Yeah, that was the problem.
That was it. That was the issue.
Yeah, that was it.
Mm-hmm. If you missed any part of the basketball discussion, you can always check out hour one of the podcast, first half of hour two. But there's some Tennessee football storylines, Houston.
Well, so we didn't really talk about it, but Tennessee hired Joe Osavec.
Yep.
Junior college coach from Nassau Community College in Long Island. I mean, the guys bounce around. Kind of the king of the RPO is what a lot of people have dubbed him. He was also at ASA College in Brooklyn. And there was an article written over the weekend, posted to GoVols Extra, that asked, will Tennessee regret losing Quentin Dormady? And we've talked a little bit about kind of some of the positions on this team heading into spring practice and where they're strong, where they're not particularly strong, and then in some cases where they are deficient. And I think quarterback, at least for me, is a very interesting spot for this team. I don't think it can be overstated how important the quarterback position is in college football. I think you can win with a variety of guys, but they better be really, really good at something. We know the type of offense, or at least somewhat the type of offense that Tyson Helton is going to run, a much more pro-style offense. The Osavec hire makes me think that they are going to do some unique things in the run game, not the quarterback run game, but the zone read look into an RPO, I think, is one that you'll see a lot. I think that's going to be an interesting addition. And I think that the question is actually, you know, an interesting one. After the season he had, I don't think very many people were sad to see Quentin Dormady go, right? I don't think people were, you know, all up in arms about the fact that Tennessee lost a quarterback. I think you were maybe a little disappointed for the depth of the position. Maybe you wanted to see him get a chance at, you know, redemption after what was not a very good season for him, as he gave way to Jarrett Garantano during the Georgia game, I guess was when the official change occurred. Do we think that Dormady, had he come back, would be the front runner for Tennessee's quarterback spot heading into the 2018 season? And if so, who's at fault here? Should he have stuck it out? Should Pruitt and the gang have done a better job of holding on to him? And what do we think about Tennessee's quarterback position moving into 18? We did a really funny segment last week talking about the 19 guys that Tennessee's trying to get in on, but the reality is they don't have a quarterback that can help them right now. I mean, unless we think JT Shrout comes in and sets the world on fire. Is Tennessee going to regret letting Dormady get away this season? Is there any way the quarterback position is a positive for Tennessee in 2018?
I don't think so. I think the quarterback position will be another – I mean, it's obviously – the most important position on your football team, and I think it'll be another year where you're hoping you get good play and you probably are going to get inconsistent play.
Meh.
Just, yeah. I don't know that it'll be bad. I just think it'll be inconsistent. I don't think you're going to regret losing Quentin Dormady, though. I think he and Garantano were going to be in another, would have been close again.
I think it depends. If you have a situation where Dormady goes and does what Nate Peterman did, what Riley Ferguson did, then that's when you're going to see Vols.
See, that's exactly what I'm fearful of.
Yeah.
Because I think Dormady had talent. I think he had a good arm. I think he was a smart kid. I think that he needed a quarterback coach to teach him how to play football, to show him where the reads were, to put him in a good offense, and to make sure that he steps into his throws. And I think that Butch Jones and the staff last year basically beat the confidence out of him by putting him behind a pretty bad offensive line and not calling plays that suited his skill set. If you'll remember, the guy threw some dynamite throws.
Yeah, when you watch some of those, they really stood out. Like, I can't remember like seeing Guarantano make a throw, and I'm just like, wow. I don't know of anyone who could make a throw like that. But I saw Dormady a couple of times be able to thread the needle, put it in a position that not many people were going to be able to do. But he was just so inconsistent. And once you saw him throwing off his back foot constantly, that's when the issues arose. And then, but I mean, we all always go back to it. That's kind of what you get out of a Butch Jones offense.
Not just that, but when you have a no quarterback coach for a while, and then a
running back coach.
Yeah, a running back coach coaching quarterbacks.
And then a tight end coach calling plays.
I mean, the whole thing, I don't think Jeremy Pruitt and his staff will regret that Quentin Dormady left.
You don't?
But I do think, I do regret Quentin Dormady's entire time at Tennessee. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like he's too far gone to be good at Tennessee this coming year.
I don't know about that. I don't
think you'll see him do anything close to what those other guys did.
Why?
Another place.
Why though? He did more here than they did.
It's true.
I'm not saying it to argue. I think this is a pretty interesting question, and I think we mentioned it before, but I guess I was also kind of holding out hope that not only would they get JT Shrout, but that maybe they could get in with one of these grads, and maybe they still will.
Yeah, the Chris kid.
Maybe they go get Chris from Stanford, and it works out for a year, and Guarantano can learn the system, and then be good as a junior, redshirt junior at that point. Maybe that plays out. I guess, though, at the time, I'm thinking, that's okay. Let Pruitt come in, sort the roster out, and go get somebody, and maybe it's a grad transfer and it works out. But now I'm looking at this roster, and I'm thinking, okay, it's Guarantano, Will McBride, and JT Shrout. I would right now take Dormady over all three of those guys in the new system, because I think with a properly coached offense and position group, he's probably pretty good. And I don't know what that means for this team. I don't know what a pretty good quarterback does. I don't know if it even makes a difference. Maybe this team is going to go 6-6 basically no matter what. But I do think Dormady might have been the best option in this offense.
It's hard to judge him based on what he did in the Butch Jones scheme, because that's what we're talking about with those other guys. Like,
right,
they never showed anything here because they weren't coached well, they weren't given an opportunity.
Well, Riley Ferguson legitimately never played.
Yeah.
Peterman played horribly.
One of the worst performances by a quarterback.
Multiple bad performances. I mean, people forget that he went in against Georgia in Athens and got broken in half that game,
so
too.
So ingrained with just that Florida performance.
Yeah,
I mean, separate that from anything else.
That was one for the ages. I mean, that was, when you talk about quarterback play going as bad as it can go, Nathan Peterman, even in the NFL this year, man, when he goes bad, he goes all the way bad. And it's scary. I don't know. I can't help but wonder, when you didn't go sign one that can come in and make an immediate impact, unless you go get Chris, but we just don't know yet. I just wonder if keeping Dormady might not have been the best option for this team in this offense.
I think they would have preferred to have another just bullet in the chamber and see, let him compete and see.
But you don't think he would have won the job?
I don't know. I don't think he would have been much better than Guarantano. I think you'd have been stuck again with two guys that were pretty close and both inconsistent. And
well, if that's the case, though, and he makes the better throws, I think that's who I would have rather had.
Maybe. But I don't think that was an option, because I don't think he was going to go through that again. I don't think he was going to have to compete again.
Maybe. I mean, he's going to have to compete somewhere.
I know, but sometimes you just want a fresh start. Sometimes you just want to...
Yeah, and maybe he needs to sit out the year for the shoulder. I don't know.
That's another good point, too. We don't know how much that affected him. Really quick break. We'll come back. Final segment of Hour 2 of the program. Stick with us right here on Fox Sports Knoxville. Final segment, hour number 2 of the program here live from the Mountain View Chevy Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. Talking a little college football.
Yeah, the quarterback competition, I think, is going to be a pretty interesting one for Tennessee over the spring.
It'll be the story again.
Yeah,
2 years in a row.
Yeah. Yeah, oh gosh, great.
I know.
No. So do you have a pick right now, though? Before, I know this will be a short segment. Is it
Jarrett Guarantano?
He's your starter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know who else it could be, right? at this point? Like, he has to be the guy?
I think he'll be better than he was last year, too. I think we almost cussed.
No bleep. I mean, he can't be worse, man. Like there's no way.
You know.
He's got a big arm. Like, he can sling it. And maybe that's what he needs is an offense that's going to keep him in the pocket and let him throw it. He needs to shorten up the motion. But Davey was mentioning kind of the wow throws. He did have, I thought, a couple wow throws against South Carolina before he got his confidence stripped from him. I thought the game-winning pass to Brandon Johnson.
That's caught. He's
should have been caught.
Yeah.
That was a great throw. He also had a third down, or maybe it was a fourth down conversion on that drive where he kind of moved around in the pocket and hit. It might have been Brandon Johnson again. I think he had like 15
probably
catches
was.
That game.
Yeah, he
down
really
the seam.
It
was a
drive.
It was a really big play that Tennessee needed, and I know Garantano put that on a rope because where I was sitting, he threw it on my line of sight to Brandon Johnson. That ball never got above about 10 feet off the ground and was a lesser. So you're right, Nate. That will be is there really a competition though? Like not to knock Will McBride. Love Will McBride, but does this not need to be Jarrett's our starter? Let's give him everything we can at this point. Like, do you not do that right now if you're Jeremy Pruitt?
Maybe not right now, but
what other option do you have?
As soon as you know that he can or as early as possible. Yes. Maybe they do already know.
I just don't know that they have another. Listen, love Will McBride. Not knocking him. I don't think he's an SEC winning quarterback.
He's not.
At Tennessee. But if it's not Garantano, then who's it? You going to throw Shroud out there? The 6'3 freshman who's not even an early enrollee? No, you can't do that. You can't do that this year. He almost has to redshirt. If you want to have any chance of him, you know, not getting. I mean, I just don't know. I think it has to be Garantano. I'm with you. I don't know that you name him immediately. I don't think you have to do that. But I do think that Pruitt can't play the game that Butch played with Garantano. I do think Garantano will be better if he has the confidence of those around him. And even if he's not the best option, he might be your best option. This is going to be a tough spring for the quarterbacks, I think. I don't see any of them looking particularly good, and I feel like Jeremy Pruitt's probably going to be a pretty frustrated coach by the end of spring ball.
Well, and there's Chris still out there. I mean, they may still be recruiting.
That's true. That's
a
true.
2018 quarterback, and they're definitely recruiting all the 2019 guys. So we'll have to see.
If they, what's the deal with a grad transfer like Chris? Could he come in now? Could he come in right now? Would they maybe be there for spring if he's graduated?
I have no idea.
It's too late in the semester to jump in now, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think he could be there for
so
spring.
So he'd have to be here
for the
first semester of summer.
Yeah. That doesn't sound like a guy you're going to roll out in Charlotte against West Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could. I guess, you know, he at least has experience. You'd have to help him out with the playbook and everything. But at least the concepts would be similar in pro style.
I do think a guy that's learned one college offense can learn a second one like 10 times faster than a freshman or even a sophomore. Although, I mean, hell, Jarrett Garantano, I don't know. How much does the old staff's, you know, deficiencies hurt Garantano as he tries to pick up a new offense?
That's the thing, man. Like,
maybe it helps. Maybe those battle scars help. Maybe it's like, you know what?
Yeah,
I've been
true.
Through the worst season in Tennessee football history.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's all uphill from here.
That is the true optimist here, is it cannot get worse.
Nope.
You have survived the worst in football history at the University of Tennessee. I don't think it can get worse. So it is, as you said, Nate, it is the start of the climb. But, I don't know. Offensive line, a little bit of a mess. Wide receiver group, kind of an unknown at this point with Juwan Jennings' absence and presence. Running backs, not exactly. I don't know. It's going to be tough. Tough year for the offense coming up, I think, if you thought last year was bad. Just a hunch.
We'll take a quick break, come back, kick off hour number three of the program. We'll get into some different topics. We've got a terrible national anthem.
The best rendition ever.
Bad
anthem.
We got to get these guys' thoughts on some of the Olympic storylines, NBA All-Star Weekend, dunk contest, and, of course, more college football and basketball on the way as well. Stick with us right here as we kick off hour three of the program. It's 3 and Out, driven by Toyota Knoxville.